Hello and welcome to More or Less on the BBC World Service. We're the programme where no number is too niche, nor statistic too specific. And I'm Tim Harford. Here at More or Less HQ, we do love numbers, but we also love books. Sometimes books about numbers come along and we're so ecstatic that we just pop with delight. One such book is The 10 Equations That Rule the World by David Sumpter, Professor of Applied Mathematics at the University of Uppsala, Sweden. I've been talking to David about one of those 10 equations to rule them all, the reward equation. It's a mathematical formula that weighs up the gains from certain activities. David Sumpter thinks we could be more deliberate about the way we use it, but it also emerges naturally, as David found out when he studied a group of ants.
When one ant finds food, it will go back to the nest, and behind it, it will leave a pheromone trail, this chemical trail. And essentially, it's assigning a score by doing this. It's saying that this is somewhere that you should be. And when the other ants find that trail, they'll follow it, and they'll also find the reward, the food at the end of it. And then if they think it's good, they'll leave the trail too. So you get a collective decision about what are the best things to go for and what are the least good things to go for.
When the food runs out, ants stop leaving the pheromones, so the trail fades, signalling to other ants not to bother going there. But how does this connect to a mathematical equation? Exchange pheromones for numbers.
The equation describes the evaporation of the trail. So every time step, you have one variable, a number which describes how good something is, and that decays. It gets smaller and smaller and smaller. I think it sounds a bit abstract, so I think maybe I could give it in a more human perspective of how we would do this. If you're watching Netflix, for example, and often we watch the first episode in a series, and my suggestion is you give that episode a score. Let's say we give it a 9 out of 10. Then the next time you watch your next episode, you give that one a score. Let's say we give it a 7. We let the 9 evaporate a little bit. We do 9 divided by 2, and we also add 7 divided by 2, then our overall score is 8. And we can use that new number, 8, to keep a track of how good the series is.
So we're basically saying, look, I'm comparing the new information with a number that summarises everything that's come previously.
Exactly. And that number is evaporating, it's decreasing all the time, and we add in the new information all the time. I use a general rule that if my series drops below a 7 or below, then I stop watching.
This means that if a series is generally made of 9s, one duff episode that scores around a 6 isn't going to kill the season.
But it won't survive if it goes down to a 3 or a 4 for any particular episode. It's quite harsh, but I think it's fair.
What is interesting about this, though, is you say, OK, if it drops below a 7, I'm going to stop watching. But the 7 isn't really the crucial parameter. The crucial parameter is how quickly the history is fading.
That's exactly right. And there I snuck in a parameter I didn't tell you about, and that was the dividing by 2. So there I forget quite rapidly. So if you want to set up this for yourself, you have to think about your two parameters. The forgetting parameter, you could divide by, for example, you could keep 3/4 of your old score and just add 1/4 of the new score. And then there's a threshold parameter. And once you've chosen those parameters, you can use that to assess everything that you do. And it's not just Netflix. I mean, you can use this to assess all of the things that go on around you, give each of them their individual score, and keep allowing it to evaporate and decide if you want to keep doing that activity.
In his book, David Sumpter explains that the neurotransmitter dopamine plays a similar role to his spreadsheet or to the ants' pheromone trails. It's keeping track of rewards for us. Unexpectedly good experiences produce a dopamine surge. Unexpectedly bad ones depress our dopamine. But that got me to wondering. We get into certain habits, the places we go for a drink, the restaurants we like, or popping to the shops for a bit of retail therapy. And this year, many of us have had to totally change the way we live our lives. So will we go back to our old habits, or will our memories fade and old patterns of behaviour just evaporate?
One answer I can give from the ants is what happens if you disturb their entire foraging environment. They don't build up the same solution as they had before because they get locked into various solutions. When you disturb them, they actually create a whole new solution in the same environment. And what I mean by solution is a pheromone network, a network of pheromone trails. So that tends to happen in all of these systems, and I'm sure it will happen with us. When you completely disturb a system, you get a new solution when you come back to the normal, even though you might be working in the same environment. So when everything goes back to the same as it was before, we can expect a different solution to the way that our society is set up.
These calculations are often inherent. How many times have you seen an ant with a spreadsheet? But we do, of course, experience the output of explicit equations every day, because the companies that surround us are using them to boost their revenue, profits, or other metrics. One such company is YouTube, owned by Google, and it utilises something called the learning equation.
They had a massive problem around 5 years ago. In that people were going into YouTube, there was these videos, there was one or two of them, and everybody was watching them. What does the fuck say? Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style. Everyone was then leaving the site, they weren't staying around. And they said, well, what can we do to get people to stick around? And they used an equation to learn our viewing habits. So could the properties of one video be used to predict how long time we'll spend watching another video? The algorithm is learning connections, in particular viewing time. They just trained it and trained it on data using this learning equation, maximizing our watch time. And then they set it loose on us and we started watching so much more YouTube than we did before.
What is YouTube actually measuring to enable the recommendation algorithm to form that conclusion?
They'll have properties of the videos and they've got properties of their users.
For example, people watching Crazy Cat videos may skew younger, whereas someone watching Mike Oldfield's rendition of Tubular Bells live at the BBC in 1973 for the 50th time might be a white middle-aged man called Tim.
They know things about the videos, what kind of texts are coming up underneath them, for example, in the comments section, the ideas that are being discussed in those videos, mainly from the comments section, actually. So they have those properties.
They then link them together. And if they see that, say, a Tubular Bells video gets the same types of view times and comments from the same users as a documentary on British fiscal policy in Gladstone's second government, then they'll recommend those videos to users with similar attributes and similar viewing habits.
So it's all done automatically based on a lot of these textual properties of the videos and the properties of the watchers.
No, that's striking though, because actually what you're saying is not really anything to do with the video. It's to do with the comments and the people who are watching it. I'm the connection. It's measuring me. Or am I misunderstanding?
No, that's exactly right. That's what it's doing.
So next time you complain that your suggested videos are entirely cats or related to World of Warcraft, maybe it says more about you than you realise. David Sumpter, author of The 10 Equations That Rule the World. And that is all we have time for this week, but do please keep your questions and comments coming in to moreorless@bbc.co.uk. Until next week, goodbye.